this is a pretty damn big week for you, Sejiwa. In a couple of days from the time this airs, you're going to be not in Brooklyn. You're going to be in an entirely different city, talking to lots of people and a very important, influential film critic about your latest film, Cosmic Disco Detective Renee. Woo-hoo! Welcome to Indie Scene for May. We're going to be talking about that as well as David Lynch's Inland Empire, a movie that we had talked about a year ago. And now we're finally a little more than a year ago. Now we're finally here to discuss it. So first of all, how you doing and what's up with the movie?
Tired, but energized. Lots of work. It was a really busy week last week. And the work continues this coming week and also later tonight. The movie got shot. The movie got edited. Few more things need to get done tonight, then it's going out to some reviewers, including yourself, and some critics, and out to the theater. It will open May 19th, which is next Friday, and so I'll be there.
2 days from now, because we're recording this a few days in advance, so yes. Folks, he's not saying he's going to finish the movie Wednesday night and send it to the theater. This is a few days before.
This is earlier. This is Sunday, the 14th, that's being recorded, but... Yeah, this Friday, the 19th, I'll be there. Matt Zoller, Seitz, the film critic, will be there. I always have a hard time saying his name fast. Too many, it's a little too complex. Yeah, Matt's coming out.
Go ahead. It took me a year to figure out how to say your name properly, so don't worry about it.
It took me about a year also. It's a tough name. Old Sanskrit-based names. I had two such names in the new movie. And Aaliyah had a really hard time with the names, her character referring to those characters, Chitrapati and Itihasaya. And I said, just shorten them, Chitra and Iti, and that'll work. So that was a lifesaver for her. The film is, I like it a lot. It's a lot, significantly like Werewolf Ninja Philosopher, except a lot more dialogue, scenes with a lot more dialogue. No shots of people walking around, for hours on end. Color. And so there's, basically three or four stories following each of the characters. Some narration pieces. I think this is, kind of like the Notes to Self in Werewolf. We have that to tie things together and clarify some points and introduce some, elements that really can't be, like certain philosophical ideas about time travel, immortality, difficult to introduce in a, talk about in a dialogue scene, but it's better if you just have a little piece of narration, because it's just too much like people talking about a Wikipedia entry or something.
So, right.
As it is, my sentences are long and there's a lot packed into the dialogue scenes. But main influences were Werewolf, a little bit Breakthrough Weekend, a lot Slow Romance, the first one, plus Jarmusch movies, a little bit of Godard, a little bit of Jonas Mekas, a little bit of Chantal Ackerman. It should be fun. I'm seeing it from the inside or from one perspective. When reviewers and audience members see it, I think I'll be able to get some other perspectives on it. I sent the first page of the script, one of the scenes, to Jamie Todd, and she loved it. So let's see.
Well, one thing I love, and I haven't seen it yet, obviously, but all those filmmakers you've referenced, I got all of those references because we've been doing a form of this show for the past several years.
That's right.
So it's fun to be in that position. I'm really looking forward to seeing how it all came together and how this lines up with the first film, because this is a sequel, and also Breakthrough Weekend, which is, we talked a bit about that. That movie really knocked me out. So I'm excited for it. Now, like in these last, few hours, you're trying to like put lock on it and finish it and get it ready to send off to not only critics and the theater that it's going to be showing at. What's that like? Do you feel any pressure? Are you relaxed about it? You feel good about it? Are you getting those jitters like, oh, I wish I could go back and fix this thing and tinker, tinker, tinker? Or are you pretty much at peace with it?
Well, just finishing up this movie, I have to say that without my decades of experience making movies, this would have fallen apart at many points, because it is a lot of stress, a lot of deadlines. You know, changes happen. You have to adapt, and it's stressful. But because I've done it before, and I've done similar movies and similar projects on tight deadlines, I can handle it. But it would be difficult, I think, for most new filmmakers to do something like this. So my recommendation is, do the script, raise all the money, don't set up a screening date, finish the movie slowly, then get, you know, set up a screening date, do the marketing and do it slowly. But that almost never happens, even in Hollywood, because once you kind of need certain dates, but once you have a premiere date, everything sort of starts happening faster because people know it has to get done.
Right. It's an interesting thing because we're talking about Hollywood films. I mean, like, say, Marvel, they announce their release dates, you know, years in advance. Like, this is going to be phase four, and phase five is coming out in July 2026 or whatever. Those are huge machines involving not only the actual film, but marketing and foreign distribution and all this other different kind of stuff. When you're talking about an independent film where you are doing everything, I feel like there's... you'd almost think, ah, it's a smaller production. There's not as much pressure, but I think there'd almost be more pressure, especially because, as you mentioned, you've got a premiere date at a theater and a Q&A happening, you know, in just a couple of days. So, you're not worried at all, are you?
I'm not worried at all because this is my, I'm, you know, reasonably concerned that things need to get done. You know, it's not as if I'm like, oh, I don't care at all. But I'm fairly confident everything will go well because I've done this kind of thing before. Matt has done this kind of thing before. Matt Zollerseitz, the film critic who's coming to help open the movie. The movie theater has done this kind of thing before. But even for Marvel, they're dealing with the strike now, right? With the Writers Guild strike. That's going to throw all the plans out the window.
Right.
Sometimes the theater's closed down. Sometimes there are technical issues. All kinds of things can go wrong. But you can't worry about that too much. You just have to try to get your work done. If it, you know, if we can't open for some reason, there's, you know, due to multiple, you know, one of many reasons, then we do the next best possible thing. We reschedule for another day. So, but as far as I can tell now, everything looks good.
Excellent. Well, I'm pulling for you. And like I said, I can't wait to see the finished film and hear all about how Friday goes. And, you know, as we've done before, you know, we're going to have you and probably Aaliyah and, you know, who else, who knows who else on the show to talk about the actual making of the movie and get all those different perspectives. So, yeah, awesome. Lots to look forward to. Cool. Anything else you want to say about Cosmic Disco Detective Rene before we talk about Inland Empire?
Even though it has a lot of art house influences, I tried to make it as fun and comedic as possible within the limits of the story. So, I think a lot of people will be able to, dig it. A lot of great shots of New York, some comedy, and, the main plot is about trying to avert a nuclear strike on a light bridge / time bridge in Brooklyn. Created by immortal time travelers. So a lot of fun stuff in the movie. So I think people will dig it. 90 minutes. Let's see how it goes. So by the time this episode airs, I think you would have seen it, or at least you'll have the link to see it. So soon we'll discuss it.
All right. It sounds like it's only a little bit different than Secret Society for Slow Romance. Just a smidge.
Tiny bit. Yeah, more going on.
All right, well, let's that's a perfect transition to talk about a movie that has certainly a lot going on, and that is Inland Empire. We had planned to talk about it last year. I think we had the discussion in March. And I don't remember, do you remember what the context was? Like why you had suggested that we talk about it? Were you discussing something else and it reminded you of it? Or set this up for me if you can remember.
I think we were going to do one of Amir's movies plus Inland Empire as one show, as indie filmmaking in LA or indie filmmaking in California. And then we ended up just doing Amir's movie, one of his movies, or maybe we didn't at all. Maybe the entire idea was scrapped because we couldn't find a good copy of Inland Empire for people to watch. Now it's available. But even though Lynch is a famous, wealthy filmmaker, this project was very indie in that he shot it himself, literally himself. He was a cinematographer using the first generation of digital video that people started using after Dogma 95 for, you know, fiction feature filmmaking, you know, three chip, three CCD portable camcorders.
Yeah.
I mean, same technology that Amir used in his first movie, which he made in 2000, his first feature, which was released at first in 2009.
Right. And we talked about, you know, we talked with him about Three Worlds last month, which is also about sort of making films or the industry, I guess, the arts in LA. And this, you know, Inland Empire is, you know, ostensibly about two actors kind of coming together to make a film. I guess it's like a Southern kind of romance, infidelity romance or something. It turns out they find out that it's actually a remake of an incomplete German film that was not finished because the two leads were murdered. And many believe that that film is cursed, and now they're doing a remake of it. So maybe that's cursed. And the lead actress played by Laura Dern starts get her life becomes very confused when she has trouble distinguishing her real life from that of the character that she's supposed to play, along with some weird like Polish folk tales or something. So it all gets very, very Lynchian, very fast, and it's 3 hours long. And I did not care for this movie pretty much at all. So I'm looking forward to this because I did some reading like on Wikipedia to help straighten out the plot because there's a lot of it. I looked at some of the critical reactions contemporary to the film's release. You know, it's got like a 75% among critics, but, you know, very kind of divided reactions. People were like really into it, and they really were not. So I'm curious, as someone who recommended that we talk about this movie, to get your input on it and see if by talking to you, maybe I can find a reason to perhaps someday pop in this Criterion Blu-ray and not use it as a coaster. Although there it is a two-disc set, so I could have two coasters. Or a keepsake that I will cherish forever because I'll finally have understood the movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think with a lot of art house, especially Lynch, you definitely need to give it some time. This was the first time that you watched it in its entirety?
Yes, and in fairness, because of my schedule, I broke it up into four viewings at different parts of the day over a very chaotic weekend. And honestly, it's strange because, you know, when I first put the movie on, I was like, what the hell is this? I watched the first hour and 20 minutes. And then the next day I went through and I fast forwarded to get to the part where I left off. And it turns out I only watched the first 17 minutes. I was mistaken. But I began to enjoy what I was watching in the next, you know, 45 minutes to an hour jag of actual time that I watched. I'm like, okay, this is cool. I'll pause it. I'll come back and finish, you know, later. And the subsequent two sessions, my estimation of the movie just kept going down and down. So I had about an hour that I really enjoyed. And I think that was the bit where they finally reveal that this is based on a, you know, there's the movie curse and what does all this mean? And are the actors, you know, they start seeing things that aren't there. Like, oh, this is about a cursed film. And I think it's kind of about that, but the subsequent 2 hours becomes about several other different things I don't think are as interesting. And what the movie ultimately is about, I feel like could have been handled in about a half hour Twilight Zone episode.
Mm-hmm. Well, this movie did not have a script from what I heard.
What? No.
And Lynch and team improvised a lot of the scenes, and then he put it together. I think maybe just the length and the inclusion of the rabbits, the TV show, makes me think that this 3-hour long movie is kind of like a TV show, that watching it in multiple parts maybe is not a bad way to do it. And trying to come up with an overall story that would fit, you know, the way we think of features, 90 to 120 minutes standalone that makes sense, I think would be difficult, especially with the Lynch movies. A lot of his stuff doesn't make, you know, regular, you know, linear, commonplace sense, more like surreal art. Like, you know, he does paintings also that are surreal art. Mm-hmm. So I think also I had this movie, and I think I may have suggested Three Worlds by Amir Madla to do together, because right. both of those movies remind me of each other. They're both about filmmaking, and they're both sprawling multiple stories that are hard to grasp in a conventional sense, right?
We kind of talked about this with Amir. I still, you know, I don't mean to second guess you guys' interpretation of the work, especially because one of you guys is the artist who created it. But
right.
you mentioned, I think it came up in that conversation, or he mentioned that it is a little, you know, maybe too indie or less accessible to like a mainstream audience. I don't see it that way. I mean, I watch a lot of mainstream films and, you know, and indie stuff. And to me, and this isn't a knock against it, it felt, for an independent film that has all these like narratives weaving in and out of each other, it felt very accessible in a way that I don't think this movie, aside from perhaps part of that hour that I mentioned, is accessible at all. Partially because, and this is where the lack of a script really brings things into focus, once I got what was going on, I got what was going on, and the next 2 hours of surreal imagery and reaction shots and, you know, a character walks through a doorway and they come out, you know, in a completely different country or timeline or whatever. I'm like, this isn't going anywhere. And I understand the importance of the movie because, yeah, it's all shot on video. And while I appreciate the effort because someone has to take those first steps, and maybe I'd think differently watching it in 2006 or 2007, but watching it today, I'm like, this kind of looks like garbage. I mean, the aesthetics of it, I can't tell if he's being deliberately crude or what, but I don't know. I feel like if he didn't have Jeremy Irons and Laura Dern and Justin Theroux in his movie and just had like unknown actors, no one would have even like thought about this movie.
Yeah. As far as the visual aesthetic, that's what video looked like back then, digital video, without a lot of color grading. I don't even know if the color grading tools that are available now are available, were available in, was it 2006, right? 2006, 2007?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of the color grading tools available now were not available as a commercial option back then. So that's, I think he just shot it. It just looks like a shot, and the video is just the video directly from the camera and then edited, without a lot of post work like we do, like a lot of filmmakers do now, which can make a movie look amazing.
I understand it's almost an unfair criticism because he was stepping out on that ledge, and mm-hmm. someone had to take those first steps, and the technology was what it was. Not my concern, but when I'm watching this movie, you know, today, you know, almost 20 years removed from it, in the back of my mind, I'm like, if this doesn't look good, because I've seen plenty of movies that were shot on, you know, ultra low budget, or, you know, they had limited resources or whatever, but still there's something in the story or the performances or the hook that would take me along for that 3 hours and I wouldn't notice. In this, when my mind is wandering and I'm like, okay, here we go with the rabbits again, I'm noticing, I'm like, is this shot out of focus? Like, what's up with this lighting? It's all harsh. This looks grainy. It looks fuzzy. What's going on here? It's those kinds of things that I realize that the audio and the visual is just one component, an important component of filmmaking, but there are other things that, you know, can be more important if the AV doesn't grab you.
Yeah, it's an unusual experimental project. Weird ideas, like a lot of dream sequences and fears, like, you know, as usual in his movies. I think the main story is the Laura Dern's character trying to make a movie. You know, I think that's the story A, and then everything else is related to that. Three Worlds, for me, this movie doesn't really make, maybe it does to David Lynch. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense, right? As one thing. So I just go with it, like listening to, you know, some bizarre music or, you know, watching a bizarre performance and moment to moment, see what's happening and see if it's interesting. A lot of it is interesting. You know, reminds me of lots of other things, but it's certainly not regular art slash entertainment. So I think any reaction to something like this is valid, including people turning it off and going, that's way too long. It could just be cut down to like 90 minutes. It probably can be cut down to a more interesting 90 minute movie.
Now, and this is a lesson that you taught me with Werewolf Ninja Philosopher. And I've stuck to it. I don't fast forward through movies anymore, even through the quote unquote, you know, slow parts of people walking around or whatever. So I stayed, you know, unmercifully, this thing goes the end credits. You know, there's stuff going on behind the end credits. Mm-hmm. Usually it's like, oh, there'll be something going on, but eventually it's going to cut to black and then it's safe to, you know, maybe turn it off because there's nothing happening. No, from the beginning to the very end of the movie, there's something going on the screen. Wasn't interesting, but I stayed and I watched it. I don't know. This movie just really bothered me because it reminded me of other things too. And it just made me wonder, like, did he see Donnie Darko?
He may have.
Maybe he had, but I'm like, a lot of this stuff just seemed unnecessary. I'd seen the, you want to call it a slick commercial version of the story he's trying to tell. You know, I respect someone wanting to tell that, you know, from an independent, you know, point of view or through an indie lens. But it's like, if you're going to remake something, it should, you know, like the characters in this movie are, they are sort of morally against, you know, remakes. The two actors are like, we never would have signed on for this film if we'd known it was a remake, because they're kind of above that. I feel like if you're going to remake a movie, there has to be a point. Mm-hmm. And this reminded me of so many other films that Lynch may or may not have seen. It's like, what is he bringing to this genre, this type of story that requires me to watch it? Not just to be made, but demands that I watch it, not just turn it off and like, okay, I'll go watch Donnie Darko again. Mm-hmm. And I don't have the answer to that. I have probably 20 minutes of this 3-hour runtime of reaction shots of Laura Dern going, or, What am I getting out of this?
Well, you're seeing a work of art slash film slash entertainment that is highly regarded. So as a film critic, you know, you're completing your education as to what's out there. But what I learned by making recently finishing Cosmic Disco Detective Rene is any improvised movie is very tough to do. So, but especially fantasy, sci-fi, you know, that kind of thing, where people expect things to make some sort of sense, click together towards the end. So it took me about a year to develop the script, multiple versions, to be able to produce a movie that makes sense, especially in relation to Slow Romance 1, and also as a separate movie by itself. So, not having a script, not making tough choices in editing, probably makes Inland Empire difficult for some people to enjoy. But you know, that's what David Lynch decided to make. And overall, I think it could be short. I mean, if I were personally, you know, if I had to recut this, I would make it maybe half the length, and focus more on the main story and then put in the other stuff a little bit, not as much as he's doing now. You know, as it is, it's interesting. It's got interesting visuals. And as a filmmaker, it's interesting to, for me to see basically a Hollywood director at that point, using the Hollywood, you know, filmmaking method, completely abandoning all that for this project and just shooting it just the way indie filmmakers shoot it now, or they were doing it back then also. So that's interesting to see that, you know, a lot of the things that Hollywood brings to film could actually be done. I mean, we already know this, but it's nice to be reminded. Can actually be done on a much smaller scale. I mean, if there was color grading and tighter editing and a script, this movie would work like some of could work like some of the best of the Lynch's movie for most people, I think. What do you think?
I don't know. It's a bit of a challenge because I don't know if you can separate, and I am not as much up on my Lynch filmography as perhaps I should be at this point. You know, and I think I've seen the most coherent of his features. I haven't seen Eraserhead in a long time, but that, you know, that was his, you know, big kind of breakthrough movie, right? That was a weird film, but I still felt it made sense. Loved The Elephant Man, which is a pretty conventional narrative, but it's definitely a weird picture with some great performances. I really don't care for his take on Dune, which I know we've talked about, especially having, you know, read the novel after we talked about it, and then seeing Denis Villeneuve's, you know, take on the first part of it. It just kind of solidified in my mind that, you know, Lynch took a shot at it, but he didn't quite understand the material he was working with or the point, which I think is evidenced by the last 10 minutes of his version of the story. So I haven't seen Mulholland Drive. I don't think I've seen a minute of Twin Peaks, mm-hmm. either the TV series or the movie. So yeah, I kind of get the Lynchian thing, just, you know, being immersed in pop culture. But watching this, I felt like, not that it was a lazy approach, but I will say, spending 3 years, and this is from Wikipedia, but spending 3 years and the talents of, you know, big Hollywood stars filming an independent experimental movie that's 3 hours long without a script, I think, and expecting people to show up for it and respond to it in any kind of way is kind of irresponsible. He can do that. But if you're like, oh, it's the new David Lynch film, like, no, it's the newest David Lynch home movie. Mm-hmm. And I'm about as obligated to seriously critique that movie as if someone were to show me their vacation photos. I don't care if Laura Dern was with them on that vacation. Mm-hmm. That's just my initial reaction. Again, I might feel differently if I watch this again, but I don't feel like I felt like I was subjecting myself to something the first time through for the most part. I don't necessarily feel like I want to do that again.
Yeah. Well, yeah. See how it feels down the road. Now, when I watched A Stranger Than Paradise in film school, I fell asleep, and then I watched Mystery Train at home and I loved it. And I went back and got really into Jarmusch movies. So one of the only movies that I walked out of in the 90s, late 80s, early 90s, was Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, because it made absolutely no sense. I was like,
Had you seen the show, or was it completely?
No. The Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, I saw a few episodes of the show at that right. point. But it really made no sense. I'm like, yeah, this is bizarre, and, you know, it doesn't make any sense. Just, you know, scenes slapped together, you know, some shocking stuff. So I walked out. But later, Twin Peaks, the TV show, the recent one, I really liked. I watched all the episodes. David Lynch's Dune, I liked a lot. That's my favorite Dune so far. Mulholland Drive, and also, what was the other one with the two actresses? I forget. You know, with Silencio, I forget. Anyway, that one, those two are a little bit weird. There's a movie called The Straight Story, or Straight Story. I think The Straight Story.
That's Richard Farnsworth, right? The guy driving the tractor across the country. Yeah, I wanted to see that. Yeah, that's on my list of, you know, bucket list. I got to make time for that.
Yeah, David Lynch made that, and reviews of it, I've heard, doesn't seem like a David Lynch movie at all. Just a very simple, you know, movie that he made. So he is capable of making just regular movies. So, yeah, I'm interested in, as a filmmaker, and also as an audience member, I'm interested in failed projects, bizarre, wild gambles, you know, experiments. There's some stuff in there that is of use as an audience member or as a filmmaker for future projects and for understanding what a filmmaker does or what future movies that may come out from that filmmaker. But yeah, as a critic, you know, looking at it as a work of mainstream or semi-mainstream entertainment, if it doesn't make any sense, it doesn't make any sense. See how it feels down the road. I mean, you don't want to say it can be judged as regular entertainment, but you know, people can do whatever they want. They can judge it against, you know, like a Marvel movie or any other art house movie, and find that, yeah, it doesn't really make much sense and maybe a failed experiment.
Yeah, and to be fair, you know, and we've had this conversation before, Terrence Malick is a filmmaker that, you know, I watched a few of his more recent films in the last, you know, 10 years as my first Malicks, and I did not like him at all. You know, I ripped Tree of Life to shreds when I first saw it. That was 2011, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, I think I watched Badlands, and that, you know, I finally got that. And then I revisited Knight of Cups, and I hated that movie the first time I watched it. Watching it again with some different context, it really kind of blew my socks off. So, but it's strange. I can't say that I would go back to Inland Empire, you know, 10 years from now and finally get it, because mm-hmm. It just feels flimsy to me. Again, it feels like something. Like you get the idea in there and you state the thesis, but you keep hitting the audience over the head with it for 2.5 more hours just in case they don't get it. And I feel like the people who are watching this movie are not the ones watching a Marvel movie. they're the ones who are engaged. Like, no, I can deal with tough material and complex issues and themes and repetition and, you know, more ethereal concepts. I don't need to, you know, see her walk through that same door again and end up in a different place. I understand what you're doing here. Or I don't understand, or I don't care. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's.
You're saying the methods used in this movie are not engaging enough.
They keep kind of making the same point.
Mm-hmm.
And then there'll be another character who shows up, like Mary Steenburgen is in this movie for three yeah. minutes. And she shows up and she starts talking about the color red or something like that. I'm like, and then she never appears again. I'm like, what was that about? And you might ask David Lynch, like he might say, well, what did you think I was about? And my answer would be, fuck you. What was it about? I'm not here for, you know, to write your movie for you. And I'm not saying I need to be handheld through everything. I like complex and interesting movies, but when I get the sense that the director is just messing around, and yet my responsibility as a film, I feel like film and film criticism kind of go hand in hand, of course, but I feel like there's almost a contract. Like, I'm not going to deliberately waste your time with something I know to be nonsense or not worthy of being called a feature film.
Mm-hmm.
And you agree to kind of treat it on those grounds. If you were to tell me, here's my three, I'm David Lynch, here's a 3-hour version of me going on that experimental ledge, and I'm not just making it an extra feature on an actual movie, I'm calling it an actual movie, that kind of rubs me the wrong way, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. To me, it's fine. I mean, people can do whatever they want. I've seen, there's a bunch of Marvel movies I've skipped because I don't want to watch two, three hours of Marvel action. And even Inland Empire, I didn't watch till recently. I skipped it to the theaters because it sounded, you know, like a bizarre video experiment.
You seen it? Had you seen it? Like on release and then recently, or was this
no,
the first
no,
time you were watching
it? I didn't see it on release. It sounded weird when it first came out. And I had other things to watch that, you know, that made more sense. But it was always an item that I wanted to catch up. I saw it, I think the first time I saw it was on YouTube, on one of those copies, you know, one of the bad copies. The new version on Criterion looks much better. I wonder if this movie, and I like to try it also, if this movie would be a fun watch at a movie theater, right? I mean, hopefully they build in a break at some point. But on a large screen, you know, watching it all at once, that might be an interesting experience.
It might be. It's hard to say. I mean, I'd almost want Lynch to do a George Lucas and go back and retouch some stuff, because there is a CGI effect at the end of this involving Laura Dern's, no, it's not her face. It's the person, a character that she confronts kind of turns into this CGI monster. And this reference will mean something to exactly two people who are watching this, but it looked like something out of Thumb Wars from 1999, just like this really bad cartoonish morphing effect. And again, I'm watching it thinking, is this deliberately bad, or is this the best he could do? Why is he showing me this? I don't get it. But again, he's out there making art, and that's, as you said, people can do whatever they want.
Right.
But it bothers me on a personal level. It's like, oh, David Lynch is a master auteur. He's got this great storied career. Everything he puts out is worth watching on some level. After having watching Inland Empire, I'm thinking, I don't know if that's true. And yeah. it makes me concerned that if this were someone's first David Lynch movie, and they watch it and they're like, I'm never watching anything this guy does again. This is terrible. They're going to miss out on The Elephant Man. They're going to miss out on Eraserhead, Dune, Mulholland Drive, you know, a movie I haven't seen, but, you know, has been highly praised. And I feel like almost like there's a responsibility on the part of the filmmaker I don't know how you gauge these things, but to say, yeah, I'm putting my name on this, like a presidential campaign. I endorse this film, to encourage people to seek out your other work. And I feel like this is almost like a full stop. Like, no, I'm done, guys. You don't have to watch anymore.
No, Mulholland Drive is good. You should check it out. It's much, the story is much simpler, still bizarre and confusing. But the cinematography is great. I mean, Lynch didn't shoot it on video. It's shot on film and shot by an experienced cinematographer. I forget who, but cinematography is great. And much simpler story, got the usual Lynch weirdness in there. No, Lynch is not in any way a easy to get into filmmaker, because it feels like he's deliberately making things weird when... You know, when there could be a simpler version of the story that makes sense and is more satisfying. So, you know, as audience members in America, watching American movies, we're used to things making sense in the movies, even if they don't, if things in real life don't make sense. A lot of Lynch's movies don't make sense, or there are many parts in Lynch's movies that don't make sense. It's some sort of a surreal dream logic. And it does look like, it can look like, you know, he's just you know, slapping things together and see what may or may not work. So, you know, for me, both this movie and lots of other Lynch's movies, it's not to expect any sort of a normal kind of story and just stick with it moment by moment and see what's interesting about it. So he's not like, you know, he's not like an indie/art house filmmaker that has a huge mainstream following, even though he has he's done some things that are like, I think the first season of Twin Peaks was very popular in America, and the recent remake got some good views. Otherwise, you know, a lot of people don't like a lot of his work.
I'm curious, you know, when you engage with Lynch's stuff, you know, fully acknowledging that it doesn't always make sense, do you have a personal gauge, like a BS meter, when you're watching it, like, this doesn't make sense, but I'm kind of into it, versus this doesn't make sense, and I wish I could stop watching it, but I'm a completist, so I'm going to keep going, or maybe you turn it off? Like, how do you know?
Well, if I'm not into it, I turn it off. And there's probably a bunch of Lynch stuff I haven't seen, because, you know, the movies have so far not sounded interesting to me, or TV shows or episodes.
I mean, like, do you, in terms of like what you find interesting in something, like, I guess if you're going into a movie and you kind of have a feeling, or maybe people have told you, this makes no damn sense, you just have to experience it. How do you, like, what gets you interested? Or, you know, you said you turn it off if it's not interesting. do you have a personal gauge, or is it just like a feeling you get while you're watching it? Do you have a line, or is it just like, you know, whatever, I'm falling asleep?
Yeah, there's movies that I've fallen asleep at, or I felt like falling asleep, and I stopped and I would rewatch later. Knight of Cups, I had to stop and rewatch, you know, I did that number of times, maybe four times before I finished it. Because it's mostly visual, right?
Yeah.
It's mostly a visual movie. So there's only so much you can watch that without a clear narrative or dialogue or exchanges happening before you're like, all right, I got to go do this other thing. But I would probably enjoy Knight of Cups at a movie theater where I'm stuck and I have to watch it. And the images are huge and amazing. With Lynch, especially this project, the image, how things look on that generation, digital video is interesting to me as a filmmaker. So that would keep me interested throughout. And also, you know, like solving a mystery to try to figure out, is there a mystery that could be solved, and what is it? One thing that Lynch could be doing is that making it seem like there's a mystery that can be solved, but it cannot be solved. It's a sort of an unsolvable mystery that's a challenge for people.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, when we get to the prostitutes, we're doing the locomotion in the...
I like that segment. I wanted that to go for the whole length of the song, but they cut it off.
Yeah. I don't know why, but like there's the bit where the one girl is talking about like her breasts, and mm-hmm. the other women are saying, oh yeah, they're great, and she says, yeah, I'm really proud of them, and she lifts up her shirt and like spends a half minute like showing them to her friends and the camera. I'm like,
yeah, they look pretty good.
I don't think they look good. I think they look kind of fake and weird, much like the rest of this movie. But right. Also, there was just part of me that thought, I don't know if Lynch is commenting on something or if he just literally wanted to wake people up during that segment of the movie, but I felt like it was cheap, almost like this didn't belong in one of his films. Maybe I haven't seen enough of his movies to know, but it just seemed like a gratuitous boob shot that you'd see from like the 90s.
Maybe it was required for distribution. I think that it's a co-production between France, US, Lynch's company, and Poland. Now, I know for a lot of movies, some female nudity does or has helped in the past with distribution, and some distributors or home video people or whoever may even request that. So maybe it was required.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's a weird movie. Anything could be put in this movie and someone could say, yeah, that makes sense in there. I mean, it's visually, yes, breasts are visually interesting, but are they essential? Are they
breaking news?
Right. No one knows why, but breasts are interesting. Scientists are working on it, trying to figure out why that's the case.
No, there's a pair working on it. No, I
told that story. I mean, I told that concept to Matt Seitz. I said, yeah, you know, beautiful women are interesting looking in movies, visually interesting. That's why we have them in there. No one knows why. And Matt thought I was serious. He's like, oh, I think we have some idea as to why.
Well, you know, speaking of, I guess, beautiful women, who doesn't, you know, she doesn't get nude in this picture. And I'm kind of glad, because, again, I think this material, for whatever I think of it, is kind of above that.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of made fun of Laura Dern's reaction shots. And that's more a commentary on Lynch as a director. He was focusing on the edit. But I thought Laura Dern was really good in this movie. And it's one of the reasons that I wish it had been more of, to quote another David Lynch movie, a straight story.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something here about an actress who's, you know, possibly having an affair with her, you know, co-star and got a jealous husband or whatever. I know it's a conventional story, but watching her in this movie, and Jeremy Irons is the director, and Harry Dean Stanton as this guy who's like he's the director's assistant who's constantly scamming money off of people. That was all in the 45 minutes that I was really interested. I'm like, okay, I like these characters. I want to see where it's going. And then the movie breaks them all up and we don't see half of them again, except for like 2 minutes. But yeah, Dern, I think Irons were really sharp in this, particularly. And I don't want to give much away because I do think somebody should watch this movie, probably not me. But towards the end, Irons shows up in a kind of a tender moment with Laura Dern. And I thought they were both really stellar in that moment. It was a vulnerability I haven't seen in Irons in a while. And it didn't almost didn't feel like acting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, yeah.
Some good moments. There are some good moments in the movie. It is unusual and maybe too long, can be tightened for a mainstream audience. There should, I think, maybe be two cuts of movies like this, you know, for one for the people and one for the filmmaker and perhaps other filmmakers.
Oh, be careful, sir, because with the advent of AI, it's very possible.
I'm sure
that you could have that, you know, David Lynch turns in the movie and the studio or whoever says, okay, this is great. Now, AI Chat GPT volume 17, I want in 5 minutes the Lynch cut, which we kind of already have, and the mainstream audience cut that can be shown on the same opening weekend as Transformers 19. Go. Mm-hmm. And then you've got, that'll be the first $1 billion David Lynch movie.
Yeah, I mean, it could happen. There's enough material that a good editor could put together, you know, a much more of a thrilling, exciting movie from Inland Empire. Hopefully David Lynch is not listening to this podcast.
I don't think he is.
Good.
But if he is, sorry.
Yeah, this is just, ignore it, David. This is just some loose talk. This is podcasters doing art. So
that's the name of our new show.
That's right. Plus with the modern color grading, I just posted up like 3 stills from my new movie. And a bunch of people have said they like it. They like it a lot. And so amazing things are possible for films shot on video now. You know, with new color grading, tighter cut, you know, this could be an interesting, still bizarre, but, you know, a more interesting movie.
Yeah. And yeah, I mean, I own the Blu-ray, so.
Good. You'll have to watch it.
At some point, yes, I'll go through and watch it and the extra features. It's 2 discs and like they've got a bunch of extra stuff on the second one that I haven't checked out, mostly because I just finished watching the movie itself. And I have to process it. But coming off this conversation.
Yeah.
Now, you said I should check out Mulholland Drive, which I definitely have to get off my list. Should that be my next Lynch movie? Is there something else that maybe is a bridge between this and, you know, something that I might enjoy a bit more?
Mulholland Drive is good, I think. You've seen Wild at Heart?
No.
That's a little bizarre also. I mean, it's got Laura Dern. I think go with Mulholland Drive. It's got Bill Pullman. It's more of a mostly a normal story, but there's some weird stuff happening that may not make sense. You kind of have to think about it and make sense of it yourself, which is not really, you know, it's not really in the movie as to what's happening, but you can read about it. And yeah, try Mulholland Drive. At least the cinematography is better in a conventional sense, and it's shorter. And, you know, performers do, you know, Patricia Arquette, Bill Pullman, they do a great job. Acting is great. So yeah, check Mulholland Drive out. Now, there was another one with Naomi Watts. What movie am I thinking of?
I think you're thinking about Mulholland Drive, because I know she was in Mulholland Drive.
Let me see.
Was Lost Highway the one that had Pullman and Arquette in it?
You know what? I'm talking about Lost Highway.
Okay.
Right. See Lost Highway next.
Lost Highway, okay.
That's what I'm talking about. Mulholland Drive is, it's the one with... Yeah, that's the one with Naomi Watts, right?
Right, and that was the movie, I think, that kind of put her on the map. And she's actually, I saw the voice of one of the rabbits in Inland Empire. kind of weird.
Mulholland Drive was 2001.
Yeah, Lost Highway was like 96, I think.
97. Yeah,
97. Okay.
Lost Highway. That's what I was talking about with Bill Pullman.
Okay.
And after that, Mulholland Drive. Mulholland Drive also makes more sense. Straight Story was 1999. Inland Empire was 2006. It looks like Inland Empire was his final feature film.
Is that right?
Yeah, he hasn't made a feature film after that.
Well, he did start working on the new Twin Peaks.
No, that's TV.
Right. Well, yeah, but I'm saying, like, as far as his output, like, did he do, like, did he? I guess he stopped making, yeah, as you say, features. But
yeah.
Could that have been because he decided to go and focus on his TV with bringing back Twin Peaks?
No, Twin Peaks was 2017, and Inland Empire was 2006. So I think he has actually retired from making fiction features.
Yeah.
So maybe that was his last fiction feature.
Well, he's still alive. He's still alive.
Right. That makes it interesting. And but him, a bunch of other major and minor filmmakers, Hollywood and indie, and even people like Tarantino, and by major I mean like Spielberg, also Scorsese, they've been complaining for the last few years that it's tough to get their movies made, and that many are thinking about the end of Hollywood, the end of their own feature filmmaking. So maybe that is partially what David Lynch is talking about, how difficult, you know, the weird world he's in when trying to make movies in LA. In Inland Empire, even though it was made more like an indie movie.
And that's, I think that's one of my frustrations with it is, and one of the things I think I responded to in that first hour is I was like, okay, actors frustrated at finding out they're in a remake and the remake is cursed. Is this some kind of a bigger commentary on, the idea of remaking, kind of recycling art in a town that's run through all of its best ideas and its glory years are behind it? I'm all for that movie. But then we run in the next 2 hours is this weird psychodrama about an actress thinking she's becoming her characters and all this other weird stuff. And it loses sight of that initial, if it was the thesis statement. If it wasn't, I think it should have been. So yeah, I felt almost like a weird bait and switch where I'm invested. And then it's like, okay, now we're going to spend 2 hours running around in circles talking about the color red and looking at rabbits. But okay, so for my next Lynch experience, Lost Highway, then Mulholland, I'm going to do Straight Story fourth because I do want to watch Wild at Heart.
Good.
Because I love Laura Dern. Yeah. All right. Well, we might have to talk about some of those in upcoming shows and see if you can talk me back from the ledge.
Well, we'll see. I mean, there's lots of other filmmakers and films we could discuss before we get back to Lynch.
Oh, but yeah. I'm not saying that's the next 4 months. I'm saying at some point, yeah, we'll have to some do point. That.
Yeah. Lost Highway, I would like to watch again. Yeah, it's a weird movie. And also, Bill Pullman's character kind of plays like a regular person who is stuck in a David Lynch, watching a bizarre David Lynch movie, or is inside a David Lynch movie and realizes it's super bizarre and he's just a regular person, right? So that kind of makes it funny and a little bit more relatable. Like, oh, this guy knows he's in a David Lynch movie.
I want to watch that tonight. Shit.
He tells one character, this is really creepy, cut it out. And then walk away. Or says, just stop it, man. This is weird. Just stop it.
Nice.
The cat, just so you know what moment I'm talking about, the guy says, I'm at your house right now. So when you hear that line in Lost Highway, you'll know that I was talking about that scene.
All right. I'll probably have forgotten about it by the time I watch Lost Highway. Good. And when it does happen, I'm going to have a weird sense of deja vu. And I won't know if it's because of this conversation or just watching a David Lynch movie.
That's
but
right.
All right. So as we wind down, go ahead.
The good news is Cosmic Disco Detective Renee makes a million times more sense because I'm making sure we go into lots of details that might be confusing through notes to self and narration pieces. So maybe it'll make too much sense. Either way, better to err on that side than have it be too confusing.
Well, thank you in advance for that, because sure. Yeah. But okay, so yeah, the movie's coming out in a couple of days. At the Lemley in Los Glendale. Angeles.
Yeah.
Oh, Glendale. Okay, sorry.
Close enough.
All right. So it's very exciting stuff. But you know, people can still support the movie. I mean, you're on this like year long mm-hmm. kind of campaign for the film and also for future production. So tell people where they can find your stuff, how they can support you and your ongoing efforts.
Awesome. GoFundMe. There's a fundraiser going on that's been going on for a couple of months for Cosmic Disco Detective Renee. I post up links on my Twitter, which is at Sijiwa Fantastic. Also early this coming, well, by the time people see this, I'm updating my main website, nycfantastic.com. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the site. My brain's fried from all the editing. But Sijiwa Fantastic on Twitter is the best place to get a lot of the info. Or you can just Google Cosmic Disco Detective Renee and there'll be lots of sites and pages up and running. If you're in the LA area, come watch the movie. Come see the opening night Q&A. There might be a second Q&A on Saturday.
Oh, wow.
I'm trying to get that happening, checking with the theater on that. But definitely opening night Q&A with myself and Matt Zoller Seitz. And
from RogerEbert.com, yeah.
From RogerEbert.com, a famous film critic. Should be a lot of fun. The Cosmic Disco Detective Renee has to figure out if immortal time travelers are going back in time and messing with history, and if that's a threat to the present. And within that structure, we have a lot of comedy and a lot of bizarreness that is entertaining.
Excellent. No rabbits, though, right?
No rabbits. We had a joke about bears that didn't get filmed, so that might still come in as a narration piece.
And lastly, are the tickets for the screening or screenings, are they on sale?
They'll go on sale on the 16th. That's their usual schedule. Every Tuesday they start selling tickets for the new movies that start on Thursday, and the movie will run the first week is May 19th through May 25th, 7 p.m. every day. And after that, I may extend the run based on how the first week goes, or I may bring it back, later in the year, because Lemley Theaters and Lemley Glendale seem like a good place to show movies. I'll find out soon.
Awesome. Well, by the time this episode goes up, tickets will have been on sale, yes. I think, for like yes. a day. So, folks, check below if you're going to be in the LA area. As Gio mentioned, you can get tickets there.
I'll email you when I get off this recording. I'll email you the tickets link.
Great. And I'll put that in the description below. So
awesome.
Along with all of the other links and stuff that Sijiwa mentioned. So yeah, definitely support his work. Also, if you're interested in Inland Empire, have information on how you can get that. And Sijiwa, thanks again. We're going to be talking about Cosmic Disco Detective Renee and other movies and we didn't even talk about your film festival.
Yeah.
The film event. You want to talk about that really quick, the film series?
Sure. This is the first of six movies I'm showing in LA this year at Lemley Theaters. People should also watch Only in Theaters, which we talked about. We interviewed the filmmakers and the subjects. That's kind of related because I found out about the possibility of showing at Lemley Theaters from that documentary, which I saw in New York. So that's like the secret. That's like the hidden seventh movie in this series, because I'll always be talking about it during this year while I promote the other movies. There's Amir Matla's Three Worlds in August. There is the filmmaker, local NYC filmmaker, made a movie called Bristol Fashion. Yeah, that's one of the movies. And there's three other movies whose titles will be revealed in early June because of distribution arrangements that are being made. Very interesting movies. I think a lot of people will enjoy them. People who are into art house, comedy, drama, experimental. The project is to see if we can do week-long runs with each movie, and the filmmakers get some or all of the money. In most cases, they get all of the money. And also the filmmakers and the theater and the programmer, we all produce the series together by lowering rates and sharing the expenses. So it's a new experiment in film distribution, and the goal is to get a lot of promotional material happening and to make people aware that these films exist.
Excellent. Well, you're doing great work. I'm curious to see how this all shakes out, you know, but just the fact that you conceived of this very, you know, very recently, you know, inspired by the documentary, and then now all of a sudden we're on the eve of the first film in this series that's going to be running throughout, you know, throughout the year and through the summer. That's exciting stuff. So congratulations again. I'm gonna let you get out of here because it's terribly late. Not for the folks watching this, it's probably very early in the morning, but you know, as with Inland Empire, time means nothing. So Sajiwa, thank you very much. We'll catch up again real soon, and yeah, take care till then.
Okay, sounds good. I'm glad you survived Inland Empire.
I wouldn't go that far. No, all right. I'll catch you later, man.